We're backstage with Jen Montone, principal horn of the Philadelphia Orchestra, before the orchestra plays the monumental Bruckner's Eighth Symphony. This is pretty exciting, Jen.
Yes, always such a thrill to do these huge works like this. And especially, I find it amazingly inspiring to do them, especially with Maestro Yannick, because he's such a spiritual conductor. So when we do these really big, emotional, especially spiritual works, it gets deep and very exhilarating.
Well, you've talked before about how you love the way Bruckner writes for the horn. What about this symphony in particular? We as audience members can just let it all wash over us, but you're actively engaged. Could you take us through how you experience this, how you approach it?
Oh, it's so much fun on so many different levels. And I think that's the most fortunate thing about what we do, classical music being special and powerful on many levels, and that's as an audience member or as a performer, but especially some of these big, deep, complex works as a brass player or as a horn player, as, you know, just any musician, but especially I think those of us that have some of these very strong roles that these composers give us, it ends up being this sort of epic journey each night that you get to sort of embark on, and kind of takes over all of your attention and all of your energy, and your body and your mind and soul are all kind of working towards this amazingly exhilarating thing that you're allowed to do. So it's a real honor and pleasure.
Well, and you've talked about how the horn, because it has long, thin tubing, can sound, have a very sweet sound, and that some composers write for it as a member of the woodwind family and some as the member of the brass family. How does the horn function in this piece?
Yes, that's actually one of our most enjoyable parts of our role. It is definitely that case in this piece. The brass often functions as an organ, and you know, to simulate the organ, which of course goes with Bruckner's whole incredibly deeply religious aspect of himself. Actually, Maestro was talking earlier this week about how there's also then these personal moments of sort of anguish and anger and frustration and bitterness that comes out. So you sort of have the spiritual round and noble kind of quality, which of course the brass is often doing. And then there's these very human moments of emotion that sort of pierce through the center, and they surprise you and take you by, you know, kind of emotionally by the collar kind of situation. So even within the brass writing, there's some really powerful differences that he asks you to make. And I think it kind of adds to the excitement of this piece and why, even though it's super long, I think it's still quite gripping. And then, of course, the horns also, we often have some other woodwind roles. The Wagner tubas, which are introduced in Bruckner's symphonies and not used all that many other places, they have a completely spiritual and very heavenly quality. It's a very, you know, separate color and usage. And then we, of course, like the first four horns, this piece calls for eight horns. So Wagner tubas are being played by horns 5 through 8. And then the first four horns actually have some woodwind kind of counter, you know, interplay, basically, especially in all the slow parts of it. So the third movement and a lot of the slow parts of the other movements, horns 1 through 4 have some nice woodwind interchange. So we're spending a lot of time having the same themes weaving in and out of our parts and theirs. So it's a blast, you know, it's like a puzzle, and it's amazing and really fun.
Wow. Now, you mentioned the Wagner tubas. Could you explain what they are?
Yes. Wagner invented these instruments. Composer Wagner invented an instrument, which is wild and cool. And he did it for his opera house, and he did it for his operas that he was composing. And Strauss took them and used them in two operas, and Bruckner took them and used them in his symphonies 7, 8, 9. They're basically like euphoniums with long stretched out bells, and they would make a beautiful lamp. We joke about that sometimes because they're also notoriously hard to tune because they're not played all that often. So it's a tricky instrument to play, but they have this beautiful round sound that has a very soft attack and a very sweet color and texture with no zing in it. It has none of the sort of zip and center and kind of grittiness that all of the other brass instruments have. It's a specialized sound, and it's used occasionally here and there, other, you know, pieces like Rite of Spring and stuff. But these three use it as a very evocative thing to make the audience feel a certain way, and usually it has something to do with heaven and, you know, resurrection type of moments. So it's a pretty emotionally palatable thing. But if you hear a sound that sounds a little like a trombone, a little bit like a French horn, not sure what it is, that's your Wagner tuba.
Wow. So it's scored for 8 horns, you say, and 4 of them, I guess, double on the...
Double. They play both horn and Wagner tuba alternately.
Right. So how does that affect you? Do you sit in a different place with all of those instruments up on the stage? Do you hear the piece a different way from the way you normally hear?
We're sitting in 2 rows. The horn section is sitting in 2 rows. We could make 1 large row, but it's actually, yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's always an interesting thing trying to figure out where to sit so that we can hear the best collectively as a wind and a brass section. And, you know, but yeah, I think as music lovers, I think it's always amazing to look at how things are written and how a composer is using the tools that he has in front of him, like AKA an orchestra, to kind of make the strongest emotional statement to the world. I mean, if great art can have these incredibly strong messages of love and hope and power and choosing, you know, goodness and over evil, I mean, all of the sort of important reasons why we all are infatuated with this art form and think it's important, it's like just to see like the little things that go into that, namely the instrumentation choices at certain moments and kind of connection of, you know, people weaving their lines back and forth between each other. So Bruckner's always very, it's a very palpable emotional event because of that.
So is this symphony, in your mind, a journey through these emotional states? How does Yannick encourage you to think about it?
I feel that it is very much that. I think there's a couple Mahler symphonies that fall in that category. There's some really big choral works that also fall in that category. And these late Bruckner symphonies, I think, have that feeling as well. Yannick is incredibly, genuinely a deep spirited person who I think one of my favorite things about him is that he will actually go there with these big pieces. He programs them and he really clearly gives it a great deal of thought as to, you know, connecting the past and what was happening with Bruckner and what was happening in the world and all of that to what a message is in a deep spiritual piece like this, and then how you can bring that into current world situations and how, you know, it can be a statement again of like, you know, the great angst moments in classical music, which overpower you emotionally, versus the like the great release moments where everything just opens up and, you know, there's hope and there's, you know, kind of like, it's like the peaceful pirate of glory, those types of moments too. And it's like he will go very strongly and deeply and stay there in both of those emotions. And so it takes you on a very powerful emotional journey. And it's a privilege and a true honor to be, you know, anywhere near or part of that, you know, thing happening.
Can you point to any particular parts? Because we're about to hear it. So
yes.
What should we listen for?
I'd say the last movement is that way. And also there's, for example, in the 3rd movement, it's so long, but you'll notice that there's themes at the beginning and then there's sort of a development type of section. And then the themes from the beginning come back, and this time they have a lot of harmonic push, like tension, and there's conflicting notes that come in on top of the notes that were so pure before. And it's kind of, I think it has to do with, you know, spirituality and belief, and then, you know, those beliefs being challenged and those being kind of eroded, or, you know, it's like force and angst being put on them. And so, of course, visually, Yannick, of course, brings those out and kind of gives you the stare if you have those angst, you know, notes that have to go against the pure notes. But also it's palpable. And if you start feeling the emotion or tension rising as you're listening, if you clue into what that is and you let yourself follow the waves in an engaged way, you'll appreciate those moments. But yeah, it's sort of the ends of the 3rd movement and the ends of the 4th movement are kind of the most intense in that regard.
Well, and for you, you're coming in and out and you're playing a lot.
Sure.
Do you have some exposed parts that are especially tricky or difficult? What's the biggest challenge for you in this piece?
This one is actually just real joy to play. I love the way this horn writing is. It's actually, I think it's trickier ensemble than it is personally. Like, I think there's nice solo parts in the horn parts, which is wonderful and enjoyable to play. But I think the key hard thing, the challenge for us, I think, is to have the bigger picture and to kind of look at it in a storytelling way and in a landscape way. So to sort of tie all the elements together, it's a pretty collaborative, you know, whole big picture thing. So it's sort of like a lot of art forms that have a lot of people working really hard for the greater whole, which is supposed to create a big image in the listener's mind or the audience's mind.
So can you summarize the message or the story as a whole?
Oh, I don't know if I presume to. I would say, I mean, I think instinctively, I think it has to do with sort of like maybe like Mahler 2, like it has to do with personal spiritual journeys and, you know, and conflicts in human life and how to bring out the best in yourself. I think it goes along that road, but you might want to talk to the maestro about that. he's better at the bigger picture than of course we are individually.
Well, it's always wonderful to listen to you play. It's wonderful to talk to you. Thank you so much, Jen Montone.
Thank you so much for having me.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.